Welcome to the jungle. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. All right, there is hour number one. Got a couple interviews coming up this hour, so you want to get yourself in here. Third hour will be wide open. We just had Darius Butler, who crushed it like always. We've got Leonard Hamilton coming up next segment. I've got Isaac Bruce coming up at 10:40 Pacific time. Some quick reaction, and then we move on to the Rams. Hey, Jim, another great interview with DB, but did he really just call Detroit a, quote, poop hole? Solid. Jake in NYC, I think that he did.
And Matt Stafford, you know, stepping up, finding him in that critical situation. Like, he's done really all career, even when he was in, you know, the poop hole Detroit that was holding him back. But it was good.
I think that he did say it was a poop hole that was holding him back.
Poop hole Detroit.
This one says, holy crap, does Dr. Butler have a PhD in football analysis? Ed in San Diego. If he doesn't, he should. Vic is in. At NoCal Vic. Quote, where's that chest-puffing bitch stick in Buffalo today? I can't hear him over the deafening sound of crickets. Haven't seen or heard from him yet. At Wrong Rush 1 tweets, dear Rome, I thought Aaron Rodgers had an actual shot at winning the game, but it turns out he went viral for the wrong reasons. Instead of stepping up, he was lying on the turf at crucial moments. Now his legacy is in jeopardy. I see what you did there. Not his best night. And he would say the same himself. In fact, did say the same himself. Dan Smack, Josh Allen is to Mahomes as Hefty was to Eldrick. He's one of the greatest, but he'll always be second best while he's in the league. Later, John and Peoria. He has been so far, but I'm not sure that he always will be. Man, if you're coming here to crack on Josh Allen, you're coming to the wrong place. I love both of them. Different types of players, both amazing. We are going to be seeing that for a long, long time. Assuming they both stay healthy, we will see that for a long, long time. Johnny Woods tweets, to the younger Bills fans who didn't suffer through the four Super Bowl losses, you are officially part of the real mafia now. You know what I love about the Bills mafia? They're owning it. But then again, they're used to it. And that's why they're owning it. But notice they're not necessarily pointing the finger. They're just saying, this is what it's like. This is what it's like to be a member of the mafia. Rome, I've been watching football for a minute. There have been very few cats who look like they are moving at a superior level. Tyreek Hill, Dion, Daryl Green had FU speed. Kind of like shared belief. It's just wrong and awesome at the same time. Senator Armando, you know, it's an interesting point, but I want to go back to what Darius Butler said. Tyreek Hill doesn't just have FU speed. He doesn't just have FU sprinter speed or crazy, crazy acceleration. He's much more than that as a player. Like he said, he can run the entire route tree. And the angles, the crazy bleeping angles that this guy takes. We're not talking about a dude who's lights out and explosive and super quick or super fast on a straight line. This guy plays the game at a different level. Plays the game. Doesn't just run, but plays the game at a different level. And him throwing up deuces. Him throwing up that peace sign. I thought Darius said it best. You know, normally you'd say, yeah, I don't know if you want to be doing that. 15 yards before the end zone. Oh, he saw a guy with a jersey in the 50s in front of him. He knew it was safe. And Coach Witz tweets, I'm old enough to remember the Music City Miracle. Forward pass. I had no interest in kicking off the Tyreek Hill with 13 seconds to play. Defense can't play so soft to give up 50 yards in 13 seconds. Fire Frazier. You mean that same Leslie Frazier who was about to get head coaching job? Listen. Squib kick it. So that's not even like second or Sunday quarterbacking or armchair quarterbacking. When you saw that kick go up, how did you not immediately think? I think most of us did. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Squib kick that. Yeah, I know it's probably scary to give them an opportunity with better field position, but better to run the time off the clock. Do not give Patrick Mahomes even one more second than he'll already have. I thought that was a terrible idea. But then again, playing so soft defensively was as well. Like, as great as this guy is, as great as they are, that bleeping cannot happen. And it's not like we're talking about the 31st ranked defense either. We're talking about the top ranked defense. The top ranked defense that has been waiting all year to get their other shot and to be in this position. And make a freaking play. Darius, I thought, made another great point. If they throw it in a tight window and they make an unbelievable play, all right. All right. But play aggressively. Especially Sean McDermott, I got to say, he came out so aggressively in that game, right? Going for it on fourth down, setting the tone early on. And then to see them play that soft defensively, the two guys who you cannot let beat you. Hated to see that. But credit to Kansas City. Cold-blooded. This one says, war Patrick Mahomes taking an offseason trip to Buffalo to personally kick each member of the Bills Mafia in the junk. Why? Why waste the time or money? He already did. He did that last night. He lined every single member of the Mafia up in the history of the Mafia and blasted every one of them with a steel-toed boot right in the package. He doesn't need to go there in the offseason to do it. He did it last night. I mean, who am I? I'm a California native. I don't want to say with nothing invested because I do have years of talking to Bills fans invested, but wow. So come in here and let me know. Talk to me. 1-800-636-8686. Then you got the Rams. Then you got the Rams, right? Let me just jump into this for a moment just to set another topic up for you. Like, I hate to say it, Bills fans, but if you think this is going to be one rough day or one rough week, I do want to say it's not. You're going to be seeing highlights from that game for the rest of your life. Highlights that are going to be played from now until there are no more highlights. Like, those highlights will never not be there. Ask Scott Norwood. So you better come up with a strategy right now for how you're going to deal with this because they're going to be there for the rest of your life. Why do I reiterate that going to the Rams game? Because I'm going to say the same thing about the Tampa Bay players. Coaches and fans are going to have to find a way to avoid seeing highlights of Cooper Kupp running right through their secondary and absolutely torching Sean Murphy bunting on the play before that. Every question that you have about Travis Kelce being wide open on that play that set up the field goal in regulation has got to be asked about Cooper Kupp as well, getting as open as he did on consecutive plays to set up Ellie's game winner. Who lets that guy get that open in that situation? Darius Butler, again, going back to him, he said Cooper Kupp's the MVP. Not the best receiver in the game, the MVP of the league. So how do you let that guy get that open in that situation? Yeah, I don't know. Never mind covering this guy. Never mind hitting this guy in the mouth coming off the line. Maybe you just freaking tackle him. When he comes off the line, maybe you have two guys tackle him. I mean, seriously, do anything and everything to make absolutely certain that the best receiver in football does not get to touch the ball. That of all guys on that team, he's not the one to beat you. But they didn't. And, of course, he made them pay. There was the 20-yard completion on second and long, and then there was this.
Stafford straight drop back, pressure off the edge. Deep ball, middle of the field. Kupp is open. It's pulled in inside the 20 by Kupp and down near the 10. Clock is moving, 18 seconds. Rams trying to get up there to spike it. They can't stop the clock with a timeout. Stafford spikes the ball with 4 seconds left, and here comes the field goal team for a 20-yard try that'll win the game in regulation.
Westwood won. I'm not sure if that was clutch and nasty as hell from the Rams or dumb as hell from the Bucks. What do you say we call it a tie? And that's not me talking. That's the Bucks radio announcers talking.
Stafford deep, throws a deep ball downfield, got Cooper Kupp in the area. It's caught inside the 15-yard line. What in the world are the Buccaneers doing?
They were blitzing up the middle, and Dominican Sue did a great job of coming up the middle and blasted Stafford, but Cooper Kupp just ran right by him.
That is the Bucs' own announcers asking, what in the world are the Buccaneers doing?
What in the world are the Buccaneers doing?
Bruce Arians said that they called an all-out blitz, but not everybody blitzed. Look, I'm no Buddy Ryan, but that's not good. You might want to have everybody on the same page for the most important play of the year. You can't have a communication breakdown at that point of the game. You practice all year for months to deal with situations like that, especially if you're the defending champs. You practice and you prep it all specifically so you don't blow it in that situation. And then you go out and you blow it in that situation. And Tampa Bay really did blow that because LA damn near blew it multiple times. The Rams tried to give that game away any way they could over and over again. Even Cooper Kupp fumbling for the first time ever. Cam Akers fumbling not once but twice. The snap that went whizzing right past Matthew Stafford. The missed field goal. The defense that suddenly fell apart at the worst time. The stop that they could not get on fourth and short that would have ended the game. Check out the Bucs announcers on that one.
Feed the ball to Fournette, tries to run. He's got a first down. 10, 5, 3, 2, 1. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Touchdown, Buccaneers. Buccaneers a point away from a tie. Fire the cannons. Fire them.
My man went from fire the cannons, fire them, to what in the world are the Buccaneers doing? In a matter of moments. You want to talk about a roller coaster. But then again, that whole game was, right? LA came out to start the game. They punched Tampa Bay in the face repeatedly. Tom Brady couldn't do jack. Von Miller was Von Miller again. Aaron Donald, just about everybody who ever rushed the passer was in Brady's face and his head. This guy was complaining to the refs, getting flagged for it for the first time in his career. Meanwhile, Stafford was a stone-cold killer in the first half. He was picking the Bucs apart to the point where even Levante David completely lost it on this play.
Third and 19 now from the LA 31. Snap to Stafford. Seven-step deep drop. Climbs the pocket. Throws a deep ball. Far side. Cup wide open. Caught at the 30. Running right to the 20. Back to the left 10. Five. Touchdown. How did Cooper Kupp get that alone downfield? A 70-yard touchdown pass.
Again, I'm not sure anybody's doing it any better than this guy right now, but how do you keep losing track of that guy? I understand why David would smash his helmet on the ground after that and pick up a 15-yard penalty, but again, how do you let Cooper Kupp get that open in that situation? And if that made David smash his bonnet, I'd hate to see what he did after Kupp beat them twice in the final minute, especially when David himself appeared to be out of position on that final play. But again, early on, it was clear the Bucs were imploding. They couldn't execute. They were getting picked apart. They were losing their cool. They were not playing like the defending champs, looking to go back-to-back, playing at home. And I'm not going to get into this sudden story now about TB44 retiring or not. That's a story for another day. But that's a story, and funny to me that that just came out of nowhere in the last few days. Like, what is that all about? What kind of attention is this guy looking for now? But let's not let that distract us from the fact that this guy, in fact, had another great look at another Super Bowl and squandered it. Then again, the Rams nearly squandered it right back to them because that game was over. It had been over for a long time, except LA refused to end it. I don't know how much credit Brady gets for that comeback, but a ton of that was not on him. It was on LA. And in the final 2 minutes, they were reeling. They had blown their lead, they had chance after chance to put the game away, and they couldn't do it, and suddenly everybody was asking again, can Matthew Stafford win in the playoffs? Come to find out, yes. Yes, he can. He can make clutch throws in the playoffs. He showed it yesterday, 28-38, 366 yards, and two TDs, and that pass to Kupp. Kupp had this to say.
Truly, what he was able to do on that play against the zero, where he knows he's hot, being able to stand in there, stare down the barrel, you know, put the ball up, and where he put that, it's just an incredible play by Matthew.
He's right. That pass right there in that situation was the kind of pass that Stafford haters love to say, can't do it. That guy doesn't have it in him. That guy can't do it. That guy can't make that play or that pass. He can't make that clutch pass in a critical moment in a playoff game. And the guy did. He did stand in. He did stand down the barrel, and he executed it perfectly. And that bet that the Rams made on Stafford, they're 60 minutes away from cashing it in. That trade's looking pretty damn good right about now. And so is the acquisition of Von Miller and OBJ and Jalen Ramsey. Yes, they blew a 27-3 lead. Yes, they're going to have to be a hell of a lot more buttoned up if they're going to beat the Niners this weekend. But the fact is, they didn't choke that game away. They finished. They made plays when they had to. And the fact is, in a league where not every team tries to actually win, these guys have been taking enormous swings. And now we're 60 minutes away from those swings paying off. 60 minutes away, and they get their rival. A rival that's had their number. Can't wait for that game either. I have more thoughts on that, but I got to get out because I've got Leonard Hamilton coming up next. Then former Ram Isaac Bruce. And then the third hour belongs to you. Our phone lines will be wide open then. Hey, quick question. Why is Old Trapper so amazing? Old Trapper Beef Jerky. Well, there is something to be said for a family business, which stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic clear view packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the best ingredients. From their lean strips of beef, seasoned with top quality spices, to their real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite, and it comes in four amazing flavors, so you have a number of ways to go. In fact, you know what you should do? Grab a 4-ounce bag of each. That way you can sample every one of them. Or if you know what you already want, load it up with the 18-ounce bag where there's enough for the entire unit, enough for the entire fam, enough for the entire team. If you don't see Old Trapper by name, make sure you ask for it by name. That makes sense, right? Old Trapper, because no other jerky compares. It is the best I've ever had. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. And everybody is still buzzing from that amazing weekend of football. Let me change up on you. I want to talk some college basketball right now. We are joined by the head coach at Florida State. In fact, not just the head coach of Florida State, but the winningest coach in Florida State history and the recipient of four National Coach of the Year awards. He is a five-time Conference Coach of the Year, led Florida State to three straight Sweet 16s. Florida State is in first in the ACC right now. They're at Georgia Tech on Wednesday night. Leonard Hamilton is my guest. Leonard, before we get into the season, really quickly, how are you doing? How is your life right about now?
Well, my life, Jim, is always centered around what we do with our team, and we're all involved here. We have an extremely different type of team than we've had in the last maybe 8 or 9 years at Florida State. We're dominated more by first-year players than we are returning experienced players, so it's been kind of an up-and-down ride. We are getting better. There's no doubt about that, but we got to continue to keep improving. So we can have some postseason life for us at the end of the season.
Leonard Hamilton joining us. In fact, why don't we just talk about that for a moment? You had three draft picks after last season, including Scotty Barnes, who went number four. You had two of the top 11 picks the year before. You've had at least one first-round pick in each of the last 3 years. Yet here you are, and although I hear what you're saying, it's a different kind of year, you are on top of the conference right now. How are you able then to keep reloading year in and year out?
Well, this year has been a little more challenging than the ones in the past because we had two youngsters that we thought we didn't anticipate losing last year. That was Raquan Gray and Balsa, off a feature. And so there's no doubt that we kind of regrouping a little bit right now. So to be where we are, it's amazing that we are somewhere near the top, let alone being on top of the league at this point. But we have 12 more hard-nosed, tough games to go in our league, and we got to make sure we stay focused and win our share of them.
Leonard Hamilton is joining us. All right, so I do want to talk to you about your team, but one more thought about a guy who was there, Scotty Barnes. He's averaging 15 points, 8 rebounds, and more than 3 assists as an NBA rookie. You and I have talked about him in the past, but how do you explain him already playing at this level against grown men at just age 20?
Well, there's no doubt that we, when we recruited him, that was the plan. We told him that we felt very comfortable that he could be a point guard or a point forward or a point two guard, however they're playing him at the Wizards. But I still think his best basketball is ahead of him. But we anticipated him making this type of progress. He's a unique and special young man. He has a competitive spirit. He has a high IQ. He's skilled and athletic. He's 6'9", with like a 7'2 wingspan and probably like a 40-inch vertical. He tips out at like 12'3", some ridiculous athleticism that he has in his body. But he's a pass-first guy. He's an unselfish guy, and he loves playing defense. Mentally, he's tough as nails. He has all the ingredients, you know, to be a big-time NBA player.
Leonard Hamilton is joining us. All right, on that topic of mental toughness, last week's win over Duke in overtime was your 13th straight overtime win, which extends an NCAA record that you already owned. I know you're not looking to make it about you, but at a certain point, it's no longer about luck or confidence that your teams play so well in tight games and always have, and in overtime. Like, is that something that you're teaching? Is it something you're recruiting? How do you explain that kind of success in those situations?
I have great assistant coaches. Stan Jones been with me 26 years. Carlton Young, a young man that I recruited out of high school. And Steve Smith, my weight training conditioning guy. You know, we all on the same page, been together for a long, long time. And I think that we work on situations a lot in practice where once we get in games, we've been over them so many times in our practice sessions that kids don't get nervous and make good decisions. But there's no doubt that we've been very fortunate to win a lot of close games. And once we get in those situations, our kids are pretty relaxed because we have gone over so much of that stuff in our daily practices.
That makes sense to me. Florida State head coach Leonard Hamilton is joining us. You know, I had Ed Cooley from Providence on the show recently, and he said that from the very start of the season, he's been talking to his guys about Selection Sunday and making sure they do what they have to do to be a part of that field. Is that something you talk to your team about, or do you take a different approach as it relates to that?
I take a totally different approach. I worry about that which I can control. I can't worry about March and January. The day is Monday, and I'm worrying about Monday, and I'm going to try to be a little bit better Monday than I was on Sunday, and I'm going to try to be a little bit better on Tuesday than I was on Monday. I only concern myself with that which I can control. If I get too far ahead of myself, then I can't do anything about the future. But what I want to do is make sure I get better today, and I'm too young to be looking past anything or today's practice. Well, Georgia Tech, we lost to them last year in the ACC tournament championship game. They play a very interesting style, different style of ball, and so we need with this team, but having six or seven first year guys, I need to be on point with what's important. That's preparing for our next game.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting too. And his approach is working for him. Yours is for you. Everybody's got a different approach. Leonard Hamilton is joining us. I know exactly what you're saying, though, especially with a young team. Now, you and I have talked about Joe B. Hall over the years. He passed away earlier this month. What kind of thoughts and emotions did you have when you heard that news?
I can't tell you how emotional I was. And I kept going from crying to laughing and remembering all the good times to crying again. And I'm so fortunate that the week before he passed, a few days before he passed, I was able to FaceTime him with his son, and we reminisced and laughed and joked a little bit. He couldn't talk very much, but every time I would tell him some things, I'd say, "We're getting ready to play Louisville. We're going to have to beat them up for you." And he was, I'd get that smile on his face, and, you know, as much as he could, but he couldn't talk very much because obviously he had some issues with his throat. But Joe B. hired me, Jim, when I was 26 years old. And can you imagine, I'm 26, and I am the assistant coach at the University of Kentucky. He rescued me because I had become disenchanted with basketball and had took a job with Dow Chemical in Charlotte, North Carolina. And my first day on the job, Joe B. called me and asked me, did I want to come in for an interview? And I jumped right on it. He changed my life, rescued me from making an emotional bad decision.
It's an amazing story, right? Leonard, really quickly, I mean, you've made the point that he was one of the strongest guardians of Kentucky basketball. Numerous analysts and former Wildcat players credit Joe and you with changing Kentucky basketball. How would you then describe his legacy?
Well, there's no doubt that he had a very challenging task replacing Adolph Ruff, one of the winningest coaches in the history of college basketball. And then that was at the beginning where the SEC was slow, you know, to bring African-American basketball players into the SEC. But Joe Hall being at Kentucky and him being aggressive from that standpoint, opening the doors for African-American youngsters, made it all right for all the other SEC schools. And it did more for integration in the South than people might would imagine.
I appreciate your thoughts on him. He is the head basketball coach of Florida State, as I mentioned. Not just that, but the winningest coach in Florida State history. Florida State is in first in the ACC with a young team. They're at Georgia Tech on Wednesday. Good friend of the program. He is Leonard Hamilton. Leonard, great to have you back. I appreciate you. I appreciate our conversations. You know this. Great talking to you, as always. Thanks so much.
Thank you so very much, Jim.
You got it. Coach Ham, Leonard Hamilton joining us. Listen, if I'm going to bust open a Monday program after a divisional weekend like that for something other than the divisional weekend, it's going to be for somebody like that. My thanks to Leonard Hamilton. All right, when we come back, talk some more football. Hall of Famer joining us, Isaac Bruce, former Ram great, class of 2020. That's next. And then the third hour is wide open. You've had plenty of time to think about this, kind of sit on this, and consider how you want to do it. Well, get ready to do it. Phone lines open, 1-800-636-8686. First up.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
So we got a second to regroup and reset. Listen up. Not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper's old fashioned. Teriyaki, hot and spicy and peppered. All come in 4-ounce bags. That way you can sample different flavors to find out the very best one for you. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? Bills Mafia, I am looking for you. I shared my thoughts on the Rams. Got a little dicey, but they were able to finish it off. We are efforting the Ram Hall of Famer, class of 2020, Isaac Bruce. He is set to be in this segment. And we should have that for you momentarily. In the meantime, you can take your shot. 1-800-636-8686. At Bill Ratka tweets, "Hey Jim, I lived through all four Super Bowl losses. Wide right, Tennessee forward lateral, and now 13 seconds. Just a squib kick away. It's numbing, it's devastating, and heartbreaking. We will be back next year. Hashtag Bills Mafia." All right, that's from Bill Ratka. As promised, we're joined right now by a Super Bowl champ. It's going to take me a moment to lay this out. Super Bowl champ, All-Pro, four-time Pro Bowler, 8 1,000-yard seasons. He retired as the Rams' all-time leader in receptions, receiving yardage, and yards from scrimmage. 1,024 receptions, more than 15,000 yards, 91 touchdowns. He is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2020, founder of the Isaac Bruce Foundation, co-host of the Ramblings podcast. He is Isaac Bruce. Isaac, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm good, Jim, man. How you doing, man?
Good, good, dude. Great to have you on, Isaac. Thanks so much for doing this. Let me ask you, before yesterday's game, you were saying that you expected the Rams to beat the Buccaneers. I'm curious, how much of that was with your head? How much of that was with your heart? What did you see in the Rams that made you feel like they could go out on the road and handle their business?
Well, more was about my heart. I'd say about 30% of it was, you know, if I was a betting man, had to do with my pocket. I just knew that the formula that we had defensively is everything that you need, all the ingredients that you need to beat a team that's led by Tom Brady in the way that they play. And they did just that. I think they pressured him all game long. You know, he started the game with four incompletes. And just to have these guys, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, harass him as much as they did yesterday, we're able to pick him off because of the pressure. It bode well. That's what I really went into that game thinking what would happen. And, man, those Rams did just that.
You're right. You got to get to this guy. You got to pressure this guy, get him off his spot. Everybody knows that. But doing it, knowing it and doing it are two different things. Isaac, what do you make about the play of Von Miller? Does he look to you now like vintage Von Miller or close to Von Miller?
Yeah, he looks very fresh. Looks like a guy who's playing with a purpose. His pass rush are strategic. He's playing the run game really well. And, you know, like when the postseason started, I thought, you know, the Rams defense as a whole, the defensive unit, would look to Von Miller for, you know, just to lean on him, just to get reaction, just to get response from him. And I think he's doing a great job leading the defense. And he's just causing havoc. I mean, you know, you can't afford to play him one-on-one. I think he has every move or pass rush in his toolbox, from the swipe to the double hand swipe to the up and under. And it's a beautiful thing to see, man, because it's like poetry in motion. He can be physical, but at the same time, he's finessing a way that he can fool these 315-pound tackles to do some, make them do some things that they're not normally used to doing.
Hall of Famer Isaac Bruce is joining us on the program. So, Isaac, what about the flip side of the ball? What do you make of how that game played out, and in particular, Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp connecting the way they did with seconds to go to set up that game-winning field goal, the way they both came through late, and especially the quarterback?
Well, you know what? I think it all trickles down from Sean McVay. I mean, things got chaotic. You're dealing with, one of the greatest quarterbacks that's ever played the game in Tom Brady on the sideline. And, you know, I've seen that movie so many times, and I've never liked the ending. So just for the Rams to come out and just remain aggressive and not really just rest your laurels on going into overtime and a coin flip, I think that was the right thing to do, just taking a shot down the field if it presented itself, and just the aggressiveness of it, man. I mean, you know, it had to be McVay calling the play and everyone agreeing to it. So, you know, Cooper Kupp's been doing a great job. And just to get open on that last play, for as big a play as it was, man, it was awesome to see.
Isaac Bruce joining us. I mean, Isaac, I talked about some of the numbers you put up, and they landed you in the Hall of Fame, and you've got a number of records still yet. He broke your single-season record for receptions and receiving yardage, though. Like, what makes him so special as a receiver, and what kind of thoughts do you have when you watch him play?
Well, I always say, you know, once a guy has it, what I mean by that is that, you know, for a wide receiver to have it, that means he now has quarterback eyes. So he can you know, read a defense. He can go pre-snap. He can manipulate. He's faster than what people give him credit for. He's very elusive than what a lot of people give him credit for. And I just think he's really strong in catching the football. He catches it in a crowd. And, you know, he plays at two speeds. That's one of the things that Torrey and myself, we always, you know, tried to make sure that we were doing. So it's kind of like making the defensive back think that we're running full speed, but we're really not. And then once the ball gets in our hand, then we were able to turn it on, and he does that perfectly.
Isaac Bruce joining us. I want to ask you about your career in a minute, but you mentioned Torrey. I love Torrey. Man, I'm a huge Torrey fan. I'm just going to say it. I was talking to him recently. He's a finalist for the Hall of Fame again. You're already in. What would you say, Isaac, to Hall of Fame voters who are deciding whether or not Torrey is worthy and should be in the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, the body of work comes up. You know, you look at his draft spot where he was drafted. He was top 10 draft pick. Sixth overall. I think he was a guy, you know, when you're drafted that high, they look for you to be a starter, not only a starter, but a potential Pro Bowler and a potential All-Pro. He was all of those things, All-Decade team. And he really just maximized his ability in the position he was in. You're talking about a guy who had six consecutive 1,300 yards receiving, you know, in a dispensation where these safeties could knock your block off. It's not like it was or like it is now, but it was a whole different era. So for him to have that level of production, man, I think it's very warranted of Torrey to be wearing a gold jacket.
All right, so Isaac, to that point where it was a different era where guys could just knock your block off. When the Rams and Bucks met in the playoffs, you know, it's hard not to think of that great playoff game that these two teams played back in 1999, the best offense in the league going up against the best defense. As a wide receiver, what was it like for you to go over the middle against the likes of Derrick Brooks, Hardy Nickerson, John Lynch, and the rest of that crew?
Well, you know what? You prepared yourself during the week. I mean, we knew it was part of the game, catch or no catch. You're going to feel Hardy Nickerson. You're going to feel, Simeon Rice. You're going to feel Warren Sapp. They're going to touch you up. So, you know, we're always thinking that our job, number one, is to catch and secure the football. And whatever happens after that happens. But these guys were, they played their positions, their jobs, their defense, better than a whole lot of teams I've ever seen played before. And just the unit itself, they probably have four Hall of Famers on that defense. And just those guys knit it together, man. It was a stretch, and it was very strenuous to get every yard that we got.
Hall of Famer Isaac Bruce joining us. All right, Isaac, so the Rams are going to face a 49ers team that has beaten them six straight times, including both times they met this season. When a team has a run like that, does it ever get in the guy's head? Do you ever just even privately think maybe they have our number? And then if so, what do you do with that? Like, what does L.A. have to do to turn this thing around quickly?
Well, you do. You do think that. I felt like, the Rams family as a whole, that's the alumni included, we're starting to think that with the last game that we played. We felt like that going out for this last game and playing this last regular season game versus the 49ers. We had to jump on them and at least win this game. We didn't know that they would make it to the playoffs. We didn't really know that they would have the success thus far that they've had in the playoffs and then have another opportunity to play them again. Yes, it's in your head. So to wipe out those thoughts and get that thinking out of your mind, it's all about the preparation. It's all about reminding yourself who you are, how you've played all year, and the things that make you successful. A strong running game, having running attempts, going downhill, falling forward when you finish, coming off the line of scrimmage for the offensive lineman, and just ruling and dominating that line of scrimmage, which sets up everything else for us. So I think it'll be a great matchup, Jim, and I can't wait to see it. I think it'll be awesome.
Sam, I can't wait. Isaac Bruce joining us really quickly. So in terms of that running game, I agree with you. Cam Akers, we'd all agree, is just an amazing story. An amazing story, but he had a rough game yesterday with a couple of fumbles. When you consider, Isaac, how Sean McVay likes to run the ball, you yourself just said the importance of running the ball as well. How do you think McVay will handle Akers this week?
You know what? I think he'll have the same level of production. I think Sony Michel also, who's had a quietly great season this year, we'll get more opportunities to run the football. I think it'll be a balanced attack between those two. And another thing that Cam Akers adds to that offense, his ability to bump him out, run some routes, and catch the ball down the field. So I think those guys, and I think McVay's faith and confidence in those guys won't wane. It'll be one snap and clear. Last week is over. And we'll move forward to, creating and trying to dominate this line of scrimmage via the run game.
Yeah, Isaac, you told a great story to The Athletic. You said that the night before you won the Super Bowl, Todd Light came to your room, and you guys were reminiscing about the season. And then, well, actually, I was going to say, but before he left, what did he say to you?
You know what? Actually, in that meeting, we also talked about, finally overcoming what the 49ers had over us for a very long time in that same year. But before he left out of the room, he kind of looked back at me and he said, "Ike, we're world champions tomorrow, man." And that was it, man. I agreed with him and it was fulfilled that very next night.
See, what was he like, Todd Light, to play with and against in practice over the years?
Oh,
how much better did you make each other?
Well, you talk about the person that helped with my development every day, being able to help me be a pro, number one. Number two, Just introducing me to the physicality of what the NFL is all about. You know, as far as press man, getting work on that every day. Todd Light was a guy that helped not only develop me, but Torrey when he came aboard. And, you're talking about a guy who would have over 100 tackles each year. I mean, in a league where a lot of cornerbacks just want to cover, he was a guy that would rack up 100 tackles and would show up every Sunday. So, One of my great friends, one of my great teammates on that team, Todd Light, he was just a consummate pro, and I love that group.
Isaac, one last thing about being a consummate pro, and you talked preparation a number of times in this conversation with me today. One of the things you talked about, during your career, you would write down goals. And I don't mean annual goals. I mean, you wrote down goals every morning, and then you wrote down goals at night. What was the thinking behind that process? Because I think that kind of put you ahead of your time.
Well, I thought it was a great mental exercise for me, and it really helped me to stay focused. I can honestly say I only fell asleep in a team meeting, in a wide receiver meeting out of 16 seasons one time. And I felt like just being able to get a game plan and really write and rewrite goals, it kind of kept me focused. And that was something that I liked sharing with new guys that came in, young guys that we drafted, Kevin Curtis's of the world, the Dane Lookers, Torrey Holt at one time, Sean McDonald. Just sharing things like that, just be active and be mentally prepared from that standpoint. And we were putting spiritual laws into place, and I felt like that helped me tremendously throughout my career.
Yeah, I can see it. Isaac, what happened that one meeting in 16 years? Were you out the night before? What happened?
I think the guy leading the meeting at that time, he was a little boring, and I kind of fell asleep on him. And, I won't call any names, but, it is what it is.
It is what it is. It's a one-off. Yeah. It's just a one-off. He's the co-host of the Ramblings podcast. He's got his foundation, the Isaac Bruce Foundation. He is a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2020, a Super Bowl champ and All-Pro, a four-time Pro Bowler. Isaac, that was great. Appreciate you. So good to get caught up with you, man. Thank you very much for that.
No problem. Thanks, Jim.
Appreciate you. Isaac Bruce, that was fun. Good stuff. All right, so already a little bit of Ram karma. Rams and Niners, could it really be any other way? I mean, yes, I suppose, if you're a Bucs fan or you're a Packer fan, but Rams and Niners going to run it back again. And how about the Niners? The hell are they even doing here? That's how tough they were. That's how tough they are. They just find a way. And going back to the conversation I had with Darius Butler, how about Jimmy G? You swerve way out of your lane to take a run at this guy, and he did have some Jimmy G moments over the weekend. But again, Tom Brady's at home. Aaron Rodgers is at home. The hoodie is at home. Almost everybody who matters, especially as it relates to this guy, yet there's Jimmy G again. Busted up, banged up. They're trying to replace him. They drafted his replacement, and yet here he is again in the championship game. All right, the third hour is open to you. Let's get some phone calls in here. I've got a couple of lines open. 1-800-636-8686. Stay tuned. An open phone third hour next.